There's nothing sexy about watching your husband's beautiful body waste away to 100 pounds of crepe paper skin stretched over knobby bones. Yet somehow, in this moth-delicate state, he manages to survive 12 weeks of internally singeing chemotherapy, made externally evident by hair burned out of the root that falls out in handfuls and raw, bleeding mouth sores. The cluster of ulcers on the inside of his lower lip looks like the chain of Hawaiian Islands, you tell him, reminding you it's been nearly 2 years since you've been on a vacation together. Yet you know in your heart there will be no more vacations or golf games or hikes in the woods. But you don't tell him that. You just keep on rallying because you don't know what else to do. The chemo will render his skin too tender to touch, though all you'll want to do is make up for lost time of touching, wrap your arms around him, whisk him away to the Hawaiian Islands to care for him with sand and sunshine and cocktails of sweet rum. You try to remember what it was like before he got sick, when his body molded to yours in your own bed in a familiar way. But the only thing familiar about his body now is the tea stain of a birthmark pressed into the skin of the right ankle that you touch every time you slide socks onto the feet that he can no longer reach. The treatments prescribed to save him may try to kill him instead, with massive heart attacks and blood clots lodging in his veins, and a gastrointestinal ulcer that goes undetected until it erupts, expelling liters of blood from his mouth across the living room rug 2 days after Christmas, which is also his birthday. And it might be at this point that he shakes a weak fist toward the sky and calls out in a thin, raspy voice, "Is that all you got, God? Because I can handle more." And he can. When he finally reaches that finish line that everybody's been urging him toward, a 13-hour surgery that the doctors label curative, that excavates a tumor from his body that's grown to the size of a softball, gouging a gaping cannonball blast of a wound into the landscape of his back. You may stand at this finish line. That's not a finish line at all. The surgeons neglected to tell you it was their finish line, not yours. Paralyzed in bewildered awe at what a human body can endure. Horrified in the knowledge that you've been a willing participant in this unspeakable game of torture. Well, surely he must be a superhero. Maybe Jesus resurrected, you reason, when his doctors emerge from the operating room proclaiming he's alive, and friends and family cry, "It's a miracle." 3 days following this miraculous surgery, you might be stopped dead in your tracks by animal screams billowing down the ICU hallway and realize they're coming from his room. You may stand in the doorway and watch as his torn apart body, encased in a plastic segmented cast that makes him look like a stormtrooper, is crane lifted from hospital bed to a chair so he can sit and stare out the window at the same bend of the Mississippi he's been staring at for over a year. And you might wonder, is this part of the torture, forcing him to watch the world go by when his own has come to a grinding halt? Can the grace of God really be responsible for this miracle? You want to tell everybody to quit their goddamn praying if it is. This miraculous surgery may leave him unable to feed himself or dress himself and shitting in a diaper, which you will insist on changing for him because you've seen how the nurse's aides who don't love him handle his precious, soiled body. And after this miraculous surgery, more infections may set in and more blood clots may form, and a bowel obstruction may distend his stomach so full and taut you think if you could just pop it with a pin, the disease might escape. And you may wonder, when will this end? When can I bring him home again and pick up our lives where we left off a year ago? But you may find out this race isn't ending anytime soon, because a month after the surgery, he might be shipped off to a rehabilitation hospital where he'll spend the next 4 months giving his damnedest to learn to walk again and pick up a spoonful of mashed potatoes and pull on a slipper with a long-handled shoehorn. And it may occur to you that it's going on 15 months since you've shared a bed together. Yet you still can't rest your head on his shoulder because pain trumps affection, and your only contact becomes an intricate dance around the tangle of tubes that tether him to monitors and IVs and liquid food supplements. Still, you get caught up in the false evidence of recovery. His Superman black hair grows back so thick and curly, and his cheeks flush pink, and the ragged edges of the wound on his back smooth out shiny and tight. But you may also notice a small, veiny lump like an exotic egg cradled in the center of the bloody nest at the small of his back. And when you point it out, nobody can tell you what it is, but everybody says, don't worry. But you may become suspicious of that lump and this whole damn game and demand a biopsy, but are told he can't endure another surgical procedure for weeks. And your rallying may begin to wear thin as he continues to learn his new normal. That's the battle cry that's splattered across the rehab hospital walls. You may insist on being at the hospital day and night because you fear he will not die from the disease, but from a careless medical error. And if you don't, he may never get a real shower or a decent meal. So you might quit your day job to haul in coolers of homemade soup and take over all of the tasks of the nursing assistants, changing diapers and blood-soaked bandages and doling out fistfuls of pills. And you may come to hate this new normal because there isn't anything normal about any of it. You might gently strip his body of blood and shit-stained pajamas and step fully clothed into the shower stall with him, standing just beyond the reach of the spray as you soap his battered body slumped against the backrest of the hard plastic shower chair. He may be so grateful for this simple act of bathing that he says, do you know it's been 5 months since I've had a real shower? And forgetting you are fully clothed, or maybe it just doesn't matter to him, he may wrap his thin, wet arms tightly around your waist, pulling you into the steamy mist with him. He may tell you that he can't believe he's loved by somebody as much as you love him, and asking you, will you please stay with him till he's through the worst of this? After this, you can leave his sorry ass. And you might wonder, can it get any worse than this? As you spit words through the watery spray, I'll do this forever, if you promise not to leave me. But no matter how many fully clothed showers you take with him, or how much you love him, or how hard you try to keep your promises, you or God or prayer chains or pixie dust or miracle-producing nuns can't stop the errors from happening or the disease from progressing. 4 months into the rehab gig, his wound site might start bleeding profusely, and the rehab staff may not be able to stop it, so he might be shipped back to the medical center where his cancer was treated, where they stop the bleeding and perform the biopsy on the lump and a PET scan for good measure. And you may be told, 10 days before Christmas, that his skeleton lit up bright and sparkly as a holiday tree. The cancer has returned, and nothing more can be done. But you've known all along that the cancer never left, because the only rule in this fucked up game that made any sense was the one that you were told at the very beginning, when you were fervently collecting stories of miracles and imploring his doctors to get in there and rip that tumor from his body before it did any more damage. And his oncologist stopped you mid-sentence as he pulled a ballpoint pen from his breast pocket and drilled the tip into the surface of a notepad. Do you see this pinpoint? He said. This pinpoint represents 1 million cancer cells. Your husband has a large, slow-growing tumor on his pelvis that can only be removed by surgery, but there also may be countless pinpoints of aggressive cancer cells hiding from our scans in the flaps of your husband's lungs, in the folds of his brain, in the tender marrow of his bones. This pinpoint is why we have to do surgery, chemotherapy first, and surgery later. So when the golden boy orthopedic surgeon with the algae green eyes and concert pianist fingers emerges from the operating room pronouncing he's cancer free, and when a friend proclaims the surgery a miracle on social media earning 147 thumbs up by proxy of your tragedy, and when the rehab hospital staff concurs that the wound is healing beautifully in spite of that mysterious lump, you might want to narrow your eyes at all of them and say, how can you be so sure? What do you know about pinpoints? Before you find yourself standing in the middle of the charred, smoldering remains of your life, thinking this is not how this game was supposed to end, you have to ask yourself the question that you are right now so afraid to ask. After surviving all of that, he could still die. I sit in front of the computer screen for a long time, the cursor flashing near the send button. Slowly, I slide the cursor to delete, then type a short message to my friend. I'm sorry, I have nothing to say to your friend. No one wants to hear from the dead guy's wife. through. Oh.